To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. My name's Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me for the next 2 hours, and I've got my school marm sitting next to me.
They could always turn it off.
Yeah. That's my wife. We got married about 6.5 months ago. And anyway, today's kind of a nice day. Mm-hmm. It's on the cusp of Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And we're right around the corner from that. Probably next weekend will be kind of slow because there'll be a lot of people celebrating Thanksgiving with their families. And
there's going to
be a lot of out-of-towners and stuff like that. Anyway, let's start with Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix. If you're in Phoenix and you need a transmission shop, I'd like to suggest that you try Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington. Phil and his staff have been around since 1968. Phil started his transmission life with the very first automatic transmissions, or the first models, plural, of automatic transmissions. And, of course, the transition to computerized transmission is easy once you understand the fundamentals of how transmissions work. So instead of using a variety of other inputs, now the computer shifts the transmission, and it's looking at a big picture of the car as opposed to maybe your throttle or maybe the engine vacuum. So Automatic Transmission Exchange since 1968, 40th Street in Washington, 602-508-0960. If you have a question or a car problem, 602-508-0960. Let me start off by saying this is a give-and-take radio show. You call in and tell us what kind of year, make, and model you have, how many miles, and then we talk about symptoms. So I ask questions, and you give symptoms. And you can answer one of three ways, yes, no, or I don't know. This week, I had a guy that came up to me and started talking cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish I could have run away. I just wanted to run away.
Why? He was telling you everything that he had already done? Or?
Oh, it was the most miserable. I mean, it's probably in the last 5 years the worst interaction I've ever experienced.
Seriously?
Yep.
Oh, I bet everybody feels sorry for you.
Yeah. Well, you know that you know my life is cars.
Yes.
And, you know, just about everywhere we go. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have walked up in restaurants and says, I recognize your voice.
Yes.
It happens. So anyway, he says to me, I have a da-da-da Grand Marquis, or a Lincoln Grand Marquis, or whatever, Ford Grand Marquis, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
My head was just, and I said, oh, well, you know, good for you. And he says, well, I got a problem. And I said, okay, so what's the problem? And he goes, well, it has a misfire code. And I said, which cylinder? And he goes, I don't know. And then he goes on to suck 5 minutes out of my life.
No.
To tell me all this stuff about the guy at AutoZone and what he said and what his neighbor said. And he went to a Ouija board, and the Ouija board told him what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there just dumbfounded.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, what were you told? Well, I looked at the spark plugs. No, what were you told? Well, the spark plugs look good. Frankly, I don't know that I can look at spark plugs and say they're good.
Okay.
I mean, if they're broken, they're bad. If they're broken, they're bad. And then if they're fouled, they're bad. If
okay.
the porcelain's broke, they're bad. If the contacts or the gap has been closed by piston hitting the spark plugs. I mean, but you can see that they're okay? Yeah. You know, I can't possibly look at a spark plug and know if it's okay. Well, I can. Oh, boy. Here
we go.
So
why are you asking you, right?
So then I said, okay, well, let's back up. When you got the engine misfire, which cylinder was it? I don't know. Okay, what I would do if I were you, well, let me tell you, and I did this, and I did that, and I went here, and I went there. I know, you told me that already. But you're asking me advice, I'm trying to give you advice. Well, I know, but he said I needed to do that, and it's probably going to be the EGR valve, and bada that. I said, we're not there yet. Can I ask you some questions? And he just kept talking.
Hmm.
And I said, no, I have some questions to ask you. Did you swap the coils? Now, the coils sit on top of these little rubber boots that attach to the spark plugs. And I said, did you swap the coils? Why? Well, that'll tell you if it's the coil. So if you know which cylinder it is, I don't know which cylinder it is. Well, you need to find out. Go ask the three whisker kid at AutoZone what cylinder it is. But the last digit tells you what cylinder it is. So if it's a PO104, then it's going to be cylinder 4. So go find out what the cylinder is. Find out where it's at on your motor. Where's it at? Well, that's what you have to find out. Which cylinder is number 4? Driver's side, passenger side, front one, back one? You have to find that out. Mm-hmm. So he says, okay. He says, but I went and I bought some engine cleaner and I ran it through there. I said, how'd that work for you? He says, well, I still have the code. And I said, is the light on constantly? Well, then I went, every question I asked him, he just went right past it. I said, well, let me ask you this. Do you know if it's a spark or fuel misfire? Well, then I went and cleaned the EGR valve. And I said, well, you know, you're not even to the first base. I said, what I would do is find out which cylinder is, the adjacent one to it. I'd swap the coil, the boot, and the spark plug. Move A to B and B to A. Clear the computer, and I didn't even get the rest out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I already looked at the coil, and it's fine. I said, well, do you have an ohm meter? And he goes, no. And I said, well, you can't possibly know if the coil's fine unless you tested it. And you have to have the specifications. No, the coil's fine. I'm telling you, the coil's fine. I said, well, did you check the one next to it? It's fine, too. How do you know? You just got through telling me you don't even know which cylinder is. So how do you know you're checking the right coil, the right spark? This went on, and finally I had to say, you know what? I've got an appointment. I got to run. And I just turned around and walked away.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 10 minutes of my life with a guy that wanted to talk that. I mean, he never answered a single question I asked him, other than the fact, do you know which cylinder it is? No, that's the only question he answered. And not everybody's like that, but that just drives me crazy.
I can tell.
You ask me a question, and then you want to argue with me, and number one, and I said to him at least 3 times, everything you've done hasn't fixed it. And he just kept going. Mm-hmm. I said, well, wait a minute. Then there's no reason to talk about history, because none of your history has fixed it. Now, if he would have shut the hell up long enough, I would have told him, find out which cylinder it is, swap the coil first, drive it, see if it comes back. If it comes back, it's still on that cylinder. But if the problem moves to the next cylinder, if it moves from 4 to 6, I think we got something here.
Yeah.
So I said, another thing you can do is swap the boot. The boot's fine. Well, how do you know the boot's fine? Well, I looked at it. Was there any white spots on it? No. Well, if there's white spots on it, that's where the spark's jumping through. Usually you can see a little dot of spark. Better yet, take the coil off, put the boot back on it, touch it to your lips, then go have your wife crank the motor over.
You are so bad.
It's just, anyway, we had a lady come in the other day, and she said, I was standing kind of close to the front counter, and she says, I have an appointment today. Yes, ma'am, we do. And we pulled up the work order and stuff. And she says, and he says, well, it's a no start condition. And she said, yes. And before Daniel could ask, she said, what it is it cranks over just fine. But she says, it doesn't start. It doesn't catch.
And she then, must have been listening to you.
No, I don't think so. And then she said, and it's intermittent. Sometimes you hit the key, boom, it starts right up. It's important, though, for us to use the right terminology.
Right.
So if you walk into an auto repair shop and you say, my car doesn't start, and you hand them the keys and they go, thank you. Well, doesn't start can mean a lot of things. Doesn't crank, and once it cranks, it doesn't catch. Or is there a click, or is there no click? Is the starter turning fast? I mean, those are all the questions that need to be asked mm-hmm. to the person who's been flying that airplane for the last month or week or year.
Yeah.
So sometimes people say, I don't know, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what was really nifty about it, she made it very clear this was a crank no start in the technical vernacular.
Yeah. Yeah.
It cranks over, but it doesn't start.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
We don't have to test the battery. We don't have to test the alternator. We don't have to do a lot of things. You know what we have to check? It cranks but doesn't start. We have to check for fuel and spark.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, and the other thing, she said it was intermittent, so if it didn't happen for us, we'd have no direction to go on. So what she told us was good.
And Daniel said that. I hope it acts up. Mm-hmm. And she says it does it cold. And Daniel says, great. Well, she had left her car in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So the night before.
Okay.
So we had it cold.
Yes.
So Daniel immediately dispatched it, told him, you need to go out there, be prepared. So he goes out there, and I think it was either Eddie or Ron. They go out there, and he sprays carburetor spray. Well, first of all, he cranks it, and it cranks over, but it doesn't catch. It doesn't start. So he pulls the air intake off of it, and he sprays carburetor spray in there, and he cranks over, and it doesn't catch. It doesn't fire. It doesn't do anything. So he adds more carburetor cleaner to the air, to the intake. And again, he cranks over, but nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we know it's no spark because we just provided it fuel.
Right.
So he brings it in. It's stereotypical module. It's easy to test. We have testers for all that kind of stuff. The module fails low speed. It fails high speed. It fails a ground. It fails everything. We pulled one out of the box. We test it. That's what needs to happen because that means you're not putting on a bad part out of the box.
Yes.
Or a part somebody took home, brought it back and said it didn't work, but it really, they kept the new one and the old one is now mine.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to test everything, especially if they've been installed, and you can tell that in a heartbeat.
Sure.
So anyway, she did a good job.
Yes.
She saved herself a lot of money because we didn't have to test the battery, the alternator, all that stuff.
Right.
So it was important.
Did she make up for that guy that drove you crazy?
No.
Oh.
I know. There'd have
it's
to
not
be,
one for one.
There have to be 10 nuns talking to me about car repair. And if I see him, I'm just going to turn and walk away real quick because he's going to want to tell me more.
Yes.
1 minute.
Now, the only good thing could be is he'd tell me he fixed it.
Okay.
And then I would say, well, what did you ultimately find? And I know he's going to go into a story that's going to take an hour until we get to, well, my neighbor came over and found out that the coil wire is disconnected or something like that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, 602-508-0960. Remember, you're making model of your car, the mileage, and then let's talk about symptoms. I get to ask you questions and you answer them. Vibrations is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you, does it shake the seat of your pants? Does it shake your steering wheel? Does it shake the whole car? Does it only do it when you're braking? Does it only do it when you're fast? Does it do it at 10 or 15 or 40 or 70? Those are the questions we ask to kind of identify what part of the car it is. We had some guy come in the other day with a vibration that described it as the steering wheel going left and right. That was a pretty good deal.
Right.
Because that was an easy one. It's a steering problem, and we found the track bar bushing was bad. But he gave us a wonderful example of the steering wheel shakes left and right. And if I make a hard right turn or a hard left turn, it goes away for some period of time. We could diagnose that, you know.
With a blindfold?
Well, we're going to need to see our eyes. It's not going to take us very long because he's really pinpointed. It's not a brake pulsation.
Right.
It's not a tire pulsation. So he steered us at the steering.
Mm-hmm.
602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee, and we're here at your service, 602-508-0960, if you want a car question or a car problem. I did want to say something in my defense. I spent the last 10 minutes venting about people that tell me how they fix their cars and stuff. I really have a good heart in this respect. When they come in, and especially guys, they do an alignment. I want to align my car. If you try to ask them why, no. Then we do the alignment, and then they come back a week later, a day later, and said it's still there.
Sure.
And then the answer is what's still there?
Mm-hmm.
And then they want their money back for the alignment, and we have to explain to them, you guessed, you lost, we're not giving you your money back.
Right.
Because you told us to do an alignment. We asked you for more information, and you said no, just do an alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're stuck with it because you diagnosed it. If I misdiagnosed it, I'll pay for mine.
Right.
But if you misdiagnose it, you pay for yours.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of diagnosis, one of the best diagnosticians in the whole town is Larry Harker's Auto. Bob at Larry Harker's Auto is really, really good. And he's been there, I don't know, for 20, 30, 40 years. But he's a gray-haired guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's been around the block. He knows what he's talking about. And he likes those cars that start off with, I've had it to everybody in town and nobody can fix this. That's called waving the red cape in front of the bull. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, or he's worth the drive if you've got one of those cars nobody's been able to fix, they've been around since 1967. Ellen's on the front counter. Bob runs the shop. He's a good guy, but he also does oil changes and cooling system flushes and all the other stuff. But as far as a diagnostician's concerned, he's really good. Good morning, Bob. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark and Renee.
Good morning.
Do you think when purchasing a new vehicle,
And I've heard you say when you, if you can negotiate the out-the-door price to the sticker price, then you're doing pretty good, right? Because you've negotiated off the sales tax and the registration and all that stuff.
And, well, it's part of your number, so your sales tax. But here's what really, this is what I want you to hear. They're going to put in, now these are examples of what I've personally seen. Freight, get ready, window tint, desert protection packages. I've seen dock fees from $50 to $250. So I see all of these other things that I don't think you should pay. How long does it take the young lady or the young man to type in your name and address and phone number for your paperwork? Why are we charging $250 for dock fees? And they have the infrastructure already there. It's already in the big picture. Why does everybody have to pay $250? Why wouldn't they just put that in other places, in the expense line like we all the rest of us do? So I know it's possible because my daughter did it, and then I've had a couple of other people tell me they've pulled it off as well, and I'm not talking about last year's models either. So, yes, if you can buy it for the sticker or darn close to the sticker, you write your check for that amount or finance that amount, then I think you've done a good job.
Do you think it's better to tell them, make them think you're going to finance it even if you're going to pay cash because they want you to finance it at the dealership? Like if I'm going to go in and pay cash, I've heard people say I shouldn't tell them that until I negotiate the price.
Well, there's two trains of thought there, and you're right. They're going to run a credit check on you, and let's pretend that you have a good credit rating, and let's pretend that they're going to give you 7% interest. Or let's pretend you're 5, okay? That's really good credit. Well, they're going to like the idea if you finance it because they might mark the 5 up to 7. Now, 7's still a good deal, but your credit history says 5 is a better deal for you, but they get to peel off 2 points of your 7. So they like it when you finance it, and they know that's an extra pot of money. So I usually say, I haven't talked to my wife about that. And really and truly, like you, sir, you probably have to ask your wife for permission to do things. And she, I've never seen a check in my life, and so she makes the decision, and that's how I handle it.
Because sometimes you can get a better deal if you finance, there's like a rebate or something, like a discount.
Well, that certainly takes a big, that's part of the big picture. You're absolutely right. It may be a discount for this model, or it may be a discount for this year, or it may be the last one that we have. It doesn't really make any difference. You're throwing all the variables that are going to get thrown at you, and you just have to sift through them. And if they say, you know, if you do this, I'll give you $100 off. You say, no, I'm happy with my price. And then a part of the negotiations is, if you want to jump first, I always make them give me a number first, and I always talk about out the door. And then I counter with, you know, the invoice or the list price or the, you know, MSRP on the sticker. And then they'll counter me back. And then there's a lot of times, as an old cowboy, I just thank them, shake their hands, and I make sure they have my name and phone number, and I'll walk in. Sometimes I don't even get out of the dealership. Sometimes I get a call in 24 hours or 48 hours, and we've got a new number for you. So a lot of them like to go back and forth, and they're going to wear you out, but sometimes I just throw a number at them and tell them that's my final offer. But you can negotiate however you want, but I think it's advantageous to hold that information, whether you're going to finance it or pay cash, because they're hoping that you're going to finance it, and if that's the case, they make additional money. If they know you're going to pay cash, then they might hold their price up a little higher. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. You bet. Speaking of selling, mm-hmm. I was reading one of the trade magazines. It had 11 articles in it. And every single one of them was written by an expert who's going to tell us how to run our business.
Okay.
Now, I would like to ask them, how long did you run your own business?
Right.
Because were you a candlestick maker or a baker in your past life, and now you've become an expert to tell us how many? And I want to know the size of your shop, and I want to know what kind of sales you had, and I want to see your balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I want to see everything. So there was some common things as I read all those articles. Industry must achieve a productivity level of 2.5 hours per RO.
Okay.
What is that in our world?
Money-wise, or
yeah.
what do you mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
250. Take 250.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. A little less than 250, but we're going to use 250.
A little more. Yeah.
They want a productivity of 250. Now, we know that there was a, and I'm not going to say anything about them and give them, there's a store that opened up not too long ago, and one of the managers had left and come and applied at our facility. And he said one of the things they had was is they had a $300 average ticket price.
Right.
They wanted that no matter what.
Yes.
They were, the staff was to bring it up to. Now, in our world, we're at $118 an hour.
Right.
So that's $236 or something mm-hmm. like that. No, it isn't.
Yeah, it is.
No, someone's going to call me on that. I better pull out the calculator because 118 times 2.5.
Oh, 2.5, yeah.
295.
236 is, yeah.
Two hours. Okay, it's 295. Call it 300.
Gotcha.
So he says $300.
Mm-hmm.
In our world, we almost always have a 50-50 mix, close parts and labor.
Correct.
So that's a $600 average ticket.
Mm-hmm.
He wants us. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, we're going to make a lot more money if we have our average ticket price at $600.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he wants 300 labor, it's going to be 300 parts. About that.
Yeah.
So I was concerned about that. And then all of these guys teach us how to make, ask us for money. These guys want money from us to teach us how to make money.
Right.
Why don't we just be them?
Mm-hmm.
you know? And then they talk about different games that you play with respect to Freon. It's a sliding scale. Now, a pound of Freon is 16 ounces, as you well know.
Right.
If you sell a can of Freon, you know that they come in 8, 10, 12, and 16 ounces.
Right.
So a can of 10 ounces is not a pound. So
right.
if your car takes 2 pounds, it's going to take 3 cans.
Mm-hmm.
So as you go through this, it's kind of difficult. Are we charging ounces or are we charging pounds? And can we charge ounces and pounds? Some software doesn't allow you to do that. So you put 1 pound or 2 pounds or 3 pounds.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference. When we come back, we'll finish it up talking about that. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're here till 12 noon. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. If you have a story you want to tell and it's a nice story, or if you don't name names, you can do that as well. If you want to tell on your husband, go ahead and give us a call, 602-508-0960.
Can I tell on you?
Yeah, and you can tell on me as well. Anyway, let's talk about S&S Tire. They're over in the west side of town, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. And what I like about S&S is they're on their second generation of mm-hmm. owners, and they're good guys. We interface with them a lot,
yes.
and I'm proud that they always seem to make the right decision, because sometimes they'll ask us, and they give us, I like that they give us the menu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I could do A, B, or C, what would you do? And so many times we're in agreement that what they picked was right, and I'm proud of them, because they're a little younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, they have a full comprehensive line of tires, which means many different brands of the same size tire. So if you want to stop by and say, I'd like you to give me good, better, best out-the-door prices, then they can do that, because they have a good, a better, and a best line of tires. They also balance your tires. They do alignment, suspension work, oil changes, and all the rest of the stuff. But if you're looking for tires and you're on the west side, may I suggest you just stop by. Now, if you think they don't have your tires, they say from wheelbarrows to tractor tires and everything in between. I've been in their warehouse. That's true.
Okay.
So we're talking about Freon and all the different ways it comes. But
sure.
we agree that 16 ounces is a pound.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that someone will buy, and it's, the sticker on the car maybe says 2.5 pounds.
All right.
Okay? Now, 2.5 pounds is 40 ounces.
Okay.
Let's just go there, 40 ounces. So somebody buys 2 cans, but they don't know they're 2 10-ounce cans. So maybe they buy 3, and so they put 2 plus a half in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2 10-ounces is 20 plus a half is 25. So he's got 25 ounces in a system that really holds 40. Then when he comes in, he or she says to the shop, I filled it up and it doesn't blow cold.
Mm-hmm.
They're convinced that they've done it right. But because they didn't pay attention to what kind of size can they bought, then they think 2.5 cans equals 2.5 pounds. And if they're 8 ounces or 10 ounces or 12-ounce cans, it doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today we have an electronic dipstick with respect to air conditioning. We've never had that before. Before, we used to chant to the air conditioning gods. We used to look at the ambient temperature outside. We'd look at the temperature of your car. We'd do the temperature on the inside. We'd check the airflow across your condenser, which is in front of your radiator. We'd wave a dead chicken around our head and cluck three times in an effort to try to determine how much Freon to put in their car.
Right.
It was a huge scientific thing. Today what we have is equipment. We'll take your car and we'll suck out all the Freon. We'll weigh it, and let's just pretend that we get 20 ounces. Mm-hmm. We're going to weigh it, we're going to clean it, we're going to remove the water, which is a big problem, and we're going to remove any solid debris, so we're going to filter it. And we're going to put it back in your car, so you get the same Freon you came in with. This is an environmental issue, too.
Better, or cleaner, yeah.
Right. So we look at your tag, and it's 30 ounces. Well, I just pulled 25 or 20 out, mm-hmm. so all I need to add is 10.
Right.
So I tell the machine, put back 10. Now, we have batted, and not only we, our industry, this piece of equipment, we are now batting 99 out of 100. We are fixing cars that never were fixed before. Mm-hmm. Just by being ever so specific with respect to how much refrigerant. I tell the story a lot of times, but it's a story that really represents the big picture. A guy comes in with, I think it was a Volvo,
okay.
and was complaining about the air. It's never done this, never done that. So we said, well, you know, it's $125, and if you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. Now, that's the service. You got to pay for the refrigerant.
Sure.
Because the machine's like $10,000. So mm-hmm. we're not going to charge you your fair portion, but we're not going to do that for free.
Right.
So we go in, and we find, like, he's 18 ounces over where he needs to be. So we pull him down to where he should be, and he's going to Tucson. And he says, I would really prefer to pay you on the way home. And I say, okay, so I take the repair order with him, and I write down his VIN number and his license plate. It's already on there anyway. And I said, I just want to make sure that you're just not going to drive away, and I find out the car was stolen. And he laughed, and he goes, no, no problem. So he leaves, and maybe 20 minutes later, he calls back, and he says, go ahead and bill me. And he had left his credit card. Go ahead and bill me.
Yeah.
He said, it's all the difference in the world. Now, other shops have done the same thing.
Sure, but people don't realize that it is important to put the right amount in, because overcharging it is just as bad as undercharging it a lot of times.
And the symptoms are almost the same.
Yeah.
They're almost the same. So, yeah, it's an issue that we have to deal with, but it's a better issue to deal with if you work with your shop and ask them if they have the ability to pull out the refrigerant, weigh, put yours back in. Now, I don't know what we charge. We charge by the ounce. But mm-hmm. let's pretend we charge $3 an ounce. We don't, but I'm throwing that number out there. That 10 ounces that we took out of his, we're not going to give him money back.
Right.
Or if he's over 10 or under 10. If he's under, we're going to charge him $3 per ounce. But if he's over, we have no way to give him that back.
Right.
We can't put it in a plastic bag and put a tie on
twist
it.
Twist tie, yeah.
And we're not going to give you credit for it either, because that refrigerant is been recently rebuilt by our equipment. The problem is only few machines have the ability to place that in a can to be used later. We still haven't figured that out as an industry. If you're 2 ounces or 10 ounces over, how are we going to handle that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a thing that we worry about, and it's a problem that evolves. And sooner or later, our industry will come to an agreement that if it's over, you know. If it's over, sometimes I've thought, I'll just give you a $10 credit, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, to use at your next repair or whatever.
Yeah.
But if it's 10 ounces, I'm not going to give you three, which is what I sell it for. But if I pay two, then I give you 2 ounces, I give you $10, and you're set. But we haven't decided what to do.
Mm-hmm.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And when we come back, we're going to talk you about we're going to talk about the 10 worst cars with respect to complaints. And the 10 best cars reference the complaints. We'll be right back. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960 is our phone number. If you have a car question or a car problem, a tire problem, an air conditioning problem, if I have a check engine light on and you happen to know the code and what it means, then we can discuss kind of the procedure. Just remember this, though. When you have an engine code and it affects the performance of your car, the very first two things that need to happen is we need to check fuel pressure and engine vacuum. And no one can do that with your smartphone. Okay, that doesn't happen. today there's all these apps that you plug in this little gizmo underneath your dash, and that talks to your smartphone, and they brag about telling you that you can fix your car yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a lean code, there's 11 different things that can cause a lean code, and one of them is a plugged fuel filter or a fuel pump that isn't performing up to where it should. And there's no way your smartphone is going to be able to see those parameters. You have to test them yourself. So it's not going to work. I made a joke on Facebook the other day about this idea that your smartphone's going to fix your car. And I used this paragraph that I know I'm going to get in trouble for, but I don't care. It's this phone or this gizmo is also capable of telling you if your wife is cheating on you.
Oh, boy.
It's also capable of telling you if your horse is pregnant. And I just made silly, stupid stuff up to just drive home the point that this is not, can happen. We had a Honda come in the other day where the timing belt had slipped a tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And it had four or five codes in it. Well, the timing belt slipped a tooth, which caused the vacuum to drop, which caused the map sensor and everything else to go haywire. So it's just a vacuum test. Well, we want 17, 18 inches of vacuum when the engine's just running at idle, and we're sitting there with 11 and it's running like, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
So now we know that we need to deal with the timing belt. Once we fixed the timing belt, cleaned the codes and went and drove it, no more codes.
Right.
But if they went into the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store who's supposed to sell you parts, God knows how many codes, how many parts they would have sold him, and chances of him knowing that this is a low vacuum problem without testing are slim enough.
Right. Well, and you kind of skipped over that, you know, when you were talking about the guys that are giving you advice on how to make your business better and all that stuff. I mean, that's in every single publication that you read.
Everyone.
And they want to, you know, up sales. So you might get a 1995 oil change, but they're going to get that thing up to $300 or whatever it is, whatever their, you know, quota is. And it gets frustrating to listen to these people and what they've, you know, had done to them.
Well, we just did some TV spots for ABC.
Right.
And the TV spots were, you go in and you get an oil change, and they give you this laundry list of things you need.
Mm-hmm.
You just simply tell them to write down the laundry list, and in order for them to bid it, they already have parts and labor and sales tax.
Right.
So put all the numbers and everything on there. Ladies, my suggestion to you is to say, oh, my husband, he's going to want to know everything. So on the repair order, just write all that information on the repair order and all the numbers and what I need,
right. And
then just put your name and your phone number on the work order, and they'll never do that. Especially when they're scared you're going to go have somebody else look at it. Now, another thing that ladies can do is, Mrs. Salem, we need to flush your upper intake. We need to flush your injectors and your transmission fluid and brake fluid are due.
Mm-hmm. And what problem are you going to fix that I'm having, or what symptoms?
It's just due, ma'am. It's just due.
Can you show me that in my owner's manual?
And see, there's the bingo right there. And then they're going to say, well, your owner's manual's not written for Arizona.
Okay, then. Would you order me an Arizona
and they don't
owner's
make one.
Manual?
And they don't make one.
I know.
So the issue really is there's a whole lot going on.
Right.
And our industry is in shambles because the newer model cars are going. We used to have a 30, 60, 90 stopping point for everybody's car. So we got to service your car and spend a lot of money at $30,000, $60,000, and $90,000. Now we got new cars that don't even call for any services until 75 to 90.
Mm-hmm.
So these, other than oil changes. So these cars are causing a problem with maintenance, which is also creating a sales problem, and that is creating the upsell problem.
Mm-hmm.
Every single magazine I read, and you know how many I read a month.
Yes.
I read the 75% of the magazine content is some guy named Chubby who's going to tell us all how to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with one thing he says. If I get my average labor to $300 and then I get $300 worth of parts, I'm going to make a whole lot more money.
Sure, yeah.
There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Is that what you really want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to inspect every car to the nth degree and sell them stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your windshield wipers need replacing. That's valid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you already know that.
Right.
But if they say your windshield wipers need replacing and you just went through a rainstorm and they perfectly swapped the water off your windshield, then you're going, okay, you just lost my confidence.
Yeah.
All righty, so we're going to do what we said we were going to do, and we're going to talk about the 27 or the 10 worst cars.
Okay.
You're going to be surprised with this. Now, this is how many complaints out of 10,000 sold.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the average is 27. Just remember, the average car has 27 complaints out of 10,000.
Okay.
The Chrysler 300 is worse with 66.
Okay.
The Jeep Cherokee is 63. The Chrysler Town and Country is 63. We own one of those, a virtual new one.
Chrysler?
Well, ours is a Dodge, okay. But the Town and Country.
Okay, same thing.
We've got, I think, what's his name said the other day that we're up to 50,000, 30 or 50,000 miles on a car mm-hmm. that's not even a year old because we use it as our shuttle bus.
Right.
And we've done nothing to it. It's mm-hmm. been good. However, the Chrysler Town and Country had 63, the average in... The Jeep Wrangler 60, and this is declining. The Toyota Prius is 51. I could have told you they were on this list no matter what. The Dodge Caravan's 49. The Edge, the car you drive. Remember that Ford you bought without
yes.
my permission? 49.
I didn't have any complaints.
Okay, 49. 48 on the Dodge Charger. The Ford Fusion, 42 out of 10,000. And the Nissan Murano at 38. So let's look at the high and the low. The average complaints per 100 or 10,000 sold
okay.
is 27. On the worst car is 66 on the Chrysler 300, and then the best worst car is the Nissan Murano at 38.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about and by the way, the 8 of the most complained about cars are domestics.
Okay.
And 2 are imports. That's fair to say.
Okay.
I'm going to be now the best cars.
Okay.
In that same number. Keep in mind, 27 is the big number. 7 of them are imports and 3 are domestic. That's slightly better. Okay. The Kia Forte is the very best one with 3.5.
Okay.
Okay. Do you know how many people drive a Kia Forte?
Not many.
There might be 7 in the state of Arizona. And so
is that in our database? I don't know.
Yeah, it is. But, okay, I mean, come on. Teasing. That car there is not even a 1%er. Okay. A Kia Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Is now, Kia Forte and the Kia Soul are the number 1 and number 2 cars.
Wow.
For the best, the least most complained about. Chevy Silverado, number 3.
Okay.
It's above the Ford. And you know what else? The GM Sierra is next.
Okay.
Okay. Then the Sentra at 9 and the Ford 150 at 9.3. Mm-hmm. Then the Subaru Forester at 9.4, and that's another 1% car. You know, people like those, but, not very. The Lexus RX is at 10, the Toyota 4Runner is at 10, and the Nissan Rogue is at 11. So you've got the very best cars between 3 mm-hmm. complaints per 10,000 sold
okay.
and 11. So mm-hmm. 3 to 11 on the best. On the worst, it's 38 to 66.
It's a big difference.
You know, in looking at the cars we work on, this doesn't necessarily reflect what we actually see, but I have to keep in mind this is Minnesota, California,
mm-hmm.
and all four corners, Florida, Washington, Maine, and Southern California. So you have to keep that in mind, Minnesota, South Dakota, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But this is 27 complaints per 10,000 sold. And so I'm looking at that, and I thought, that's kind of interesting. Because yes. these are cars, I knew the Prius was there. I knew the Wrangler was there.
I was going to say the Grand Cherokee or whatever
oh, yeah.
it was.
They're,
I mean.
We see those a lot.
We do.
See those a lot. But the best cars, first of all, we don't see the Kia Forte or the Kia Soul. We've yeah. got a couple. Doesn't Patty drive a Soul?
I think she does now.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And it's because her husband picked it up for her.
Anyway, no, she picked it up.
I know. The Chevy Silverado, that's no surprise on the best one. Neither mm-hmm. is the GM Sierra, which is the same truck.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ford F-150 is the number one selling truck, so it should be on this list. The Subaru Forester, there's probably 4 in all of Phoenix. The Lexus
RX. No, we do have a lot of customers that drive Foresters.
I know. The Lexus RX, 10. The Toyota 4Runner, now that's a big one. Mm-hmm. And that's a... Boy, people love the heck out of that,
yeah.
and it is a good vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
It is a good vehicle. And then the Nissan Rogue, again, I don't think it's a good-looking car, but then again, I'm not a Nissan person.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how it works out, the best and the worst. So mm-hmm. anyway, just keep in mind, there's lots of people out there that want to charge us money to teach us how to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing my best to avoid them as much as I can. Yeah. because I'm like everybody else. Who would we want to invest our money for us?
Somebody that has invested their money and been successful.
I would want, like, Warren Buffett.
Sure.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Bill Gates has done a pretty good job, and they talked about that, not Lyft, but what's the other people that will pick you up?
Yeah.
Uber.
Uber, yes.
Yeah, somebody said on the radio that if you would have done Uber in 2010, your $100 would be almost $1 million or something like that.
Yeah.
But still, I think if I'm going to trust somebody to tell me how to invest my money or what to do with my money, I want it to be Warren Buffett.
You want it? Okay.
I also want to tell you about Strictly Diesel, service and repair up at I-17 in Deer Valley. Oh, no. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road.
There
I got Deer Valley on my head. Nate, who owns Strictly Diesel, is the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home. Tall, good looking, and he's got hands like tennis rackets. He has huge hands. But he's the nicest guy. I can't imagine Nate ever getting mad at anybody. He's just the nicest guy in the world. But when it comes to diesels, his hard drive is filled with information that few other people have. And he works on the light truck diesels. So he works on the Dodge, the Ford, and the Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
He's really, really good at what he does. So if you have a GM, a Ford, or a Dodge, and you want somebody to fix or service your car, your truck, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a good place. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, just east of the I-17. They also sell parts 24 hours a day, and that's kind of important as well. So it's a good place to go. And if you have a question about your diesel, they'll take questions, but unfortunately they can't spend a half an hour on the phone trying to diagnose on your phone. But if you want to know a cold air kit for your diesel, or if you want to know if this exhaust system is better than this one, then typically they can help guide you. So that's Strictly Diesel and Repair. Okay, when we come back, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is, what's your name again?
Oh, I don't know. Mrs. Salem.
Mrs. Salem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mrs. Salem. Anyway, I think, like most everybody else, we're planning a Thanksgiving with our family.
Yes.
And I think the kids are coming up on Friday, so they can spend Thursday with the other half of the parents.
Correct.
So the spouse's parents. And we don't mind that at all, because
in-laws,
if they come up on Friday, then the grandkids are here Friday, usually Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
Which is where I want to be.
Yes.
I don't want to be with you guys.
Oh,
I want to be out riding quads with all the kids. I want to be out chasing jackrabbits.
Yeah.
I want to be out doing fun stuff. I don't want to be sitting around the dinner table sipping wine.
Yeah, but you're
talking about the neighbors,
complaining because you're fixing quads and this and that.
You're right. You're right. You're right. I wish some of the dads were out there with me because when the quad breaks down, it kind of is a calamity, and then I lose track of all the kids, and I'm sitting there dealing with a flat tire or something.
You act
like that.
Like you're the only one out there, but.
Who else is?
We all are.
You're on the patio.
Okay. We're out there,
yeah.
As I said.
Like you said. But anyway, I look forward to Thanksgivings. I look forward to being with the grandkids. I look forward to teaching them bad words, because their parents don't do that.
Mark Salem, you're not teaching them bad words.
Oh,
on
yeah.
On my watch.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, on your watch, that might be the case. But they have to hear it somewhere. No sense in not hearing it from Papa.
Right.
That's important. Of course, I'm kidding. We'll be back right after this.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. If you have a car question, or if you want to ask a question about your air conditioning system or what kind of fuel economy, or I'm really good when the husband and wife are arguing about something to do with a car. And I think most of you should know this. I usually side with the wife. Wait a minute. Let me turn
you
up.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, what? What did you have to say?
Never mind.
Okay. You owe it to him now, because I had your mic down.
Oh, I said, except you don't agree with me.
No, well, that's not true. When you talk about cooking, I don't know how to cook.
That's right, you don't.
I can hardly make a can of Campbell's tomato soup. You know, I found out the other day that I didn't read the directions. You have to put a can of water with it.
Yeah.
I thought, this is really a small portion.
Oh, boy. And I thought you knew how to make soup. I'll take that off your list.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, we had a gentleman call.
Okay.
And he wanted me to repeat the Harker spot, 38th Avenue and Indian School.
Okay.
Now, first of all, let me say to everybody that if you go to MarkSalem.com, Mark Salem like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M.com, there's going to be a clicker there, a button that says best. And that means my best car repair shops for all of the valley. Then from there, it's going to take you to a menu that says transmission, mechanical, paint and body, diesel. I think those are the four categories. So you're going to click, in this gentleman's case, he's going to click mechanical, and then he's going to click Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And then he'll find Larry Harker's Auto. I don't have a phone number for them, mm-hmm. but it's called Larry Harker's, H-A-R-K-E-R, Auto Repair. 38th Avenue and Indian School, and he's open, I'm pretty sure, Monday through Friday. Ellen will be the one that answers the phone. She's Bob's wife, mm-hmm. but Bob runs the shop.
Yep.
So it's a good place, and we have a caller. How can, who we got?
We have Chris.
Chris, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, I have an F-150. It's 98, and my heated core is out.
Okay.
And so my question is there a way that I can set the heater core inside the cab, because nobody ever rides with me. Can I just put it on the floor?
I kind of understand what you mean, but the problem is the heater core sits in a box and behind it is a fan. And so how are we going to do that? I mean, and you also have to run the two heater hoses. You're going to have to come through the hood and in the window on the passenger side. That's the only way you're going to get them in. And so you're not going to be able to capture those two hoses underneath the dash, because the heater core actually sticks through the firewall and the hoses connect from the engine side. Have you got an estimate to do the heater core?
Yeah, it was like $1,000.
Okay. I would think you'd get another one.
Okay.
Here's what you're looking for. Most of us are going to bid it like this, the heater core and the labor, and then we're going to go ahead and bid 6-8 feet of hoses and 4 clamps and then 1.5 gallons of coolant. That means we have to take the heater hoses off the heater core, so there's only 2 more connections we have to take off to replace both hoses, and especially if the hoses are old. Then we're going to drain the cooling system anyway, because we don't want all that coolant in the passenger floorboard of your truck. So we're going to put 1.5 gallons coolant in, and most of us will just flush it out with clean water and put 1.5 gallons coolant in it and send you on your way. So if you're getting all of that, now the evaporator core, which is your air conditioning cold box, is also in the same container called the evaporator case. If that's dirty, and it will be on your 98, and especially if your dog sheds or your wife sheds inside the truck, it's going to have hair and trash all over it. And almost all of us have a vacuum that we vacuum all that off. And so you'll have much better airflow across the evaporator. And then oftentimes there's going to be some coolant from the heater core leaking. We'll clean all that up. So I just think you should get... What part of town are you in?
Mesa.
Call Thompson's.
Mm-hmm.
Call Thompson's on Apache or a main street just east of Stapley. And talk to Brian or Thelma. Tell them you've got a 98 Ford F-150, and tell them what cab it's got and what bed it's got and stuff like that. And can give them the first 11 of the VIN, because the last 6 are the serial number of your car, so no one can identify you by the first 11 of your VIN, but that tells us everything we need to know. And just say to them, you know, I'd like a full estimate for a heater core replacement, and I'd like you to include the hoses, the clamps, the coolant, and then cleaning out the evaporator case the best you can while you're there. A lot of the stuff we have to do is underneath the hood to release the box that's inside the cab. And sometimes we have to remove a certain part of the dash to slide the box out. So it's not easy, but I'm going to guess that I think you can do better than $1,000.
That would be great. I really appreciate that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Yep. Thank you.
And it's always...
If it wasn't winter, he could... bypass it, or I mean, you know,
you're right. Yeah, so you're right. And usually when heater cores leak, they leak coolant into the passenger compartment,
right?
And usually the carpet gets wet and it kind of stinks a little bit, and if it's hot, it steams up your windows on cold mornings and all that other kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the two hoses underneath the hood, there's one that pushes and there's a return.
Mm-hmm.
So you take those hoses and you just loop them, Mm-hmm. So you take one off at the heater core, and you just loop it back to where the other one goes. And we've effectively bypassed the heater core, and that buys you some time.
Right.
During this time of the year, you're probably going to want, you know, defrost and some heat.
Right.
But during the summertime, we get a lot of people that ask us to just bypass the heater core.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that's a temporary fix, but that'll come and bite you, you know, during the October through April time frame. It's going to get cold.
Right.
So do you know how come the how the defrost works?
No. I assume that the blend door just moves around and it gives you defrost on the windshield.
Okay. Well, that is the truth. We are going to... But it's interesting because is it cold air or hot air that removes the fog, the
cold.
Mist? Yeah, it is. It's mm-hmm. it's unusual. It's still warm,
yes.
but typically on defrost we're going to use a little colder air because colder air sucks. How many times have you been in your car where you've turned on your defrost and maybe the car's hot
mm-hmm.
and the windows are fogged up and you turn them on and you can see the fog just disappear?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so it has a lot to do with the heating system and the cooling system, but that's how it's supposed to work. You should be able to just see it go away. And it's just a matter of that we're going to use a temperature to remove the fog from the inside of the windows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of tough to go to work with your one hand steering and the other hand with, you know, a baby diaper wiping the inside of
baby diaper.
Well, whatever.
I know.
It's a soft cloth.
A rag.
Okay, fine. All right. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We were talking a little bit before about shops, and, you know, that it's tough right now with the mm-hmm. economy. And it's not the economy that's tough. It's the car maintenance is tough.
Right.
And our industry is creating words and tasks that we sell. So we're going to play this self-defense for car expense game.
Okay.
Mrs. Salem, you really need to have your intake flushed.
Okay, and what is that going to help?
Well, it's something that needs to be done because your intake gets dirty, and the cleaner intake means your car's going to run better.
Okay, and can you show me that in my owner's manual where I need to do that?
Oh, this is as needed, Mrs. Salem.
Okay, well, I don't have any symptoms or my car's not running bad.
And let me just change that. What symptoms do you have or do I have that you're going to fix?
Okay.
Okay, so say that.
You just said it.
Okay,
what symptoms do I have that you're going to fix?
That's the hard question right there. That's the bingo question.
Yeah.
That's the one. And here's the real problem. The problem, as you well know, is the service writer writes the car up and
right.
talks to the customer. Now, they are going to interface with the customer. So the ticket goes to the dispatcher. The dispatcher takes it and gives it to a technician. So the technician says it. Now, he hasn't made a bunch of money this month or this week, so he's gonna sell.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes, I'm going to fix what she brought it in here for. Maybe if you're lucky, he's going to say that. And this is independents, chains, and dealerships. I'm not picking on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That because it happens in independents, shops like ours,
mm-hmm.
the chain stores,
yeah.
and then the dealerships. It happens. So he's going to give the list to the controller or to the service writer. Then the service writer is going to call. The service writer is not a technical person. What's in his head was filled by the technician.
Mm-hmm.
So the technician says, oh, this is really bad. She needs to have her intake cleaned. This is really bad. So they're going to call you and sell you an intake clean. When you say, what symptoms do I have? It's going to be, they're not going to know.
Right.
Because they didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you hit them with, well, where does it say that in my owner's manual? Where is the interval? What kind of interval? Is it 30,000 I'm supposed to clean my intake? When you start talking about flushing the intake, flushing your throttle blades, flushing your back of your valves, in my vernacular, that's called a wallet flush.
Right.
It just, all I'm doing is flushing your wallet. I'm not doing anything. But the best questions are, what symptom do I have that you're going to fix?
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a blubber question.
Yeah.
All they're going to do
minutes.
Is blubber. They're not going to. Now, there are times where you say, you brought it in for a rough idle, an intermittent idle, a rolling idle.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to flush your throttle blades. We're going to clean your throttle blades. You say, is that going to fix my problem? We say, yes. We're done. You have symptoms, we're going to clean your throttle blades, and we're done.
Right.
So there is a time that that happens.
Sure.
There is a time that the symptoms are going to match the repair.
That flush might work or could work or should work.
Or will work. Mm-hmm. It will work. So those are the kinds of things that you typically have. Now, why do you ask for your old parts back?
So that if the vehicle wasn't fixed by their replacement of that part, I can put my old part back on and we can start again.
They can put your old part
back. They can put
that. That's right.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example. A mass airflow sensor or some dashboard electronics or I'm going to put a new windshield wiper motor in to fix
one
it
minute.
Because it's flapping intermittently. Well, at that point, you say, okay, well, just do me a favor. My husband or my wife insists, because her brother's a mechanic. He likes to take that stuff apart. But put the old part in the box and just set it on the passenger side floor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no shop's going to give you your oil filter or your fuel filter or your old coolant back. That's
right.
Silly.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is the hard part. Now, every once in a while, there is a situation where there's a core on it.
Sure.
It's an alternator or a starter or an air conditioning compressor. So there could be a $25, $50 core. Some people say, I'll pay it, but then when I bring it back, I want my core back.
Yes.
That's okay.
Right.
That's okay. But when you say, I want the mass airflow sensor, which is a $400 part, and I'm using this as an example. So you put the mass airflow sensor in, and they say, I'm going to fix your problem with the mass airflow sensor. So after a week or 10 days or 2 weeks, you figure out they didn't fix your problem.
Sure.
Then you go back and you say, same problem.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my old mass airflow sensor. Put it back in, and we're going to start with the credit.
Mm-hmm.
So when I leave, I either want my money back for the mass airflow sensor. Now, here's the sticky part. Who pays for the diagnosis that was clearly defective?
Well, I think that would go towards the new. You wouldn't be charging another diagnostic fee.
You're right.
Okay.
I agree with you.
In our shop, we don't.
Well, and I think a lot of shops follow.
Yeah.
I mean, we follow them. They follow us.
Sure.
But the real issue is if they say, you know what? I'll give you your money back, and I'll put the old mass airflow sensor. I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm.
Then the question becomes, wait a minute.
What about the labor?
What about the defective diagnosis that you guys used to put the mass airflow sensor?
Yeah.
Those are the tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that point, like we do, you look up. If it's a first-time customer, might be a battle.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if it's like Mr. Jones the other day who has 88 work orders in our database,
mm-hmm.
he's getting his money back.
Well, sure.
So customers versus, you know, shoppers and one-timers. But I think at the end of the day, most shops would probably give that back.
Exactly.
I think most shops.
Because if they're one-time customer, you could win them over with that, and they trust you then.
And at least they're not going to go out and give you a bad review.
Exactly.
The guy didn't fix my car, gave me all my money back.
Yeah.
Bingo. All righty, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and there's five of them. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me touch base real quick about something important to me. When I refer you to a shop and name the shop, it's not because I'm gambling. It's because of this. On my website, it says, if you go to one of my shops and you have a problem, and the Better Business Bureau says to the shop, give them their money back or fix the car, and the shop doesn't, I will up to $5,000. So if your transmission doesn't get fixed, I will, up to $5,000. I personally will. And here's the good news. I have my list started in 1988, and I've never paid one. We came close this year, but we never paid one. The shop owner finally stepped up and took care of it. Well, Action Auto isn't the shop owner, but he's at I-17 in Deer Valley, full-service, family-owned auto repair shop. He has a BMW master technician, is one of his technicians. The rest of them are ASC certified. And he's really good at the communication level. So if you live anywhere near Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley, I would like to suggest that Deer Valley, North Phoenix, he's been around since 1983. Just remember, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Steve, good morning.
Mark and Renee. Hey, when do you use your air recirculation and your cruise control?
Anytime you want.
So, like, even if your air conditioner's not on or the heat's not on, is there an advantage or disadvantage?
No, none at all. None at all. You can use them together, separately, or whatever. Are you talking about fuel economy?
Or just is it good for the air conditioner, bad or smart or dumb?
No. That's a good question. But the air conditioning system is going to die because of hours and miles. And every once in a while, it'll blow a hose and you'll have to fix it. But let me change your question this way. Mark, if I give you my car, can you drive it and can you wipe out my air conditioning unit, or can you use cruise control to hurt my air conditioning? And the answer is hell no. I can't do that. So I can drive down the road at 110 miles an hour and turn your air conditioning on and off, and I would probably drive around the world once before that had an effect on your car.
Okay, and then so the cruise control was kind of, I should have made it separate. Like if I'm driving on the freeway a long way, is that more efficient for my?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because the computer's monitoring engine vacuum and your throttle, and it knows when you climb a hill. It knows when you're going down the backside of the hill. I use my cruise control all the time. All the time. I love my cruise control. So it's not going to hurt anything. You're going to get the best fuel economy. The only negative on cruise control is the possibility of you falling asleep.
Right, right.
That's it. That's right. So have no fear. And I want to tell you something. Cruise control, we might have to deal with cruise control 5 times a year. And mm-hmm. It's usually a bad brake light switch that won't let the cruise control cancel or won't let it start. It's usually a switch. But, yeah, cruise control, if I had to feed my family on cruise control, we'd all starve to death. Cruise control repairs. Okay?
Thank you.
All righty. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
How you doing, Mark?
Good, good.
Good. Question, direct injection cars talk of the buildup on the back of the intake valves because the gasoline is not flushing them. Have they been out long enough? Are you starting to get a feel for that? How do you handle it?
No, our industry hasn't decided to handle it. As you well know, we used to squirt the injector behind the intake valve, and we use a thin, thin film of oil. I'm doing this for the rest of the benefit. We use a thin fill of oil to help the valve open and close. Well, because we took this fire hose that blows gasoline on that oil and washes it into the engine, and we move the injector to the cylinder, now what's happening is that oil is oxidizing, and it's when it oxidizes, it burns to a crisp, and then it plugs that intake port up. And the person that has direct ignition is faced with a huge bill. And there is nothing out there that I would tell you to use because I don't trust it. There's a whole lot of magic lotions that swear they're going to fix that. Here's the question. If we introduce it into the fuel tank, this area of concern will never see fuel. If we introduce it to the oil, then we have to bring up the oxidation point on the oil, and synthetic oil would probably do that best. But there's nothing that you can spray in the air intake because the air on the intake valve is going out, not in. So we have all these dynamics, but the answer to your question is there's no good fix. Our industry is in big trouble with respect to direct injection fuel engines. So I'm not buying one, and if somebody asks me if they should, I tell them no.
All right. So right at this point here, do you think the dealers are going to start bringing them in and charging for the cleaning it where they would pull the intake off and have to literally scrub a dub or soap to get those out? But that's a real thing?
Yes. The answer is yes. I think people with direct ignition should go in on a regular basis and have that inspected to ensure that if you're out of warranty, you still had it in for an inspection. And, yeah, you have a little bit of carbon, but we're not going to do anything about it. I'll give you another example. Chrysler has a transmission problem right now on their 8-speeds. Everybody kind of knows it's the shell and it's the wave plates and it's the clutches. But Chrysler is trying to fix it with software like everybody else does. They're not successful. So we got a bunch of these transmissions out there that have a harsh 1-2 shift, either up or down. People don't like that. So what's going on now is everybody's just sitting there waiting for Chrysler to come out with a new transmission. This is going to be plug and play. We're going to bring your car in, put a new tranny in it, and you're on your way gone. Well, there's a lot of people that are waiting for this to happen, and it's not going to happen soon. We're in the software phase right now. We aren't into the hard part phase. So this happens a lot. It's just going to happen to different people. But as far as what you're talking about is concerned, nobody's doing work for free on these. And if you're out of warranty, that doubles down on it. But it is an expensive repair.
Hey, Mark, I mean, the warranty, you know, they say $70,000 or $100,000, that's hard part. This is going to be a bridge they haven't crossed before as far as warranty.
Well, no, the warranty, if they got a powertrain warranty, that's parts and labor. So, and this is all labor. I mean, the gaskets are insignificant. we're going to have to pull the top part of the engine apart and chisel all this carbon out from behind the valve. There's just no either way around it. So it's real labor intensive, but it's not parts intensive. And powertrain powertrain warranties cover parts and labor. Anyway, you bring up a good point.
One more question. What are the symptoms going to be when they'll start having problems? What will I see?
You're going to have a cylinder misfire, a lack of power, and a check engine light with a variety of codes. And that and so there is a symptom that's obvious to the driver. And so you don't have to worry about missing it. Okay?
All right. All right. Thanks, Mark.
You betcha. And Dan, how can I help you today?
Hey, Mark. Great show. Very intrigued by your show. And about 95% of it goes way over my head.
Okay.
So here are the symptoms my car has, that my car has that's completely different than my own symptoms. I have a 2015 Corvette Stingray, and when you drive it in automatic, it makes a fluttering, ticking noise under the hood when I'm going at very different speeds. So I brought the car into the dealership. They put it on their machines, their testers, whatever. Again, don't know what I'm talking about. This is sticking, number four sticking, number seven sticking. We're going to change gaskets, this, and that. They usually have it for like 2 or 3 days. They say, hey, it's good to go. I'll pick it up. I drive it home. Still making the same noises. I bring it back the second time. Same thing. It's there for 2 or 3 days. Oh, we weren't able to test all of them. Now we're going to test these over here. We found one over here that's sticking. We fixed it. It's good to go. I pick it up, drive it home. Same
noise. Okay, we have to stop the madness because nothing's fixed your car. And so this is the time when I get to ask you questions, but I'm up against a break. But here's my question. You need to answer it on the other side of the break. I want to know if it's there all the time or if it comes and goes. Is it intermittent? And is it related to weather? And is it related to total mileage? I'll be back. And it happens after it warms up.
No.
It's a yes or no. I'm going to ask you a slew of questions.
Okay.
So it doesn't happen first thing in the morning, and it happens after that. Now, does it happen throughout the day, no matter what?
Yes.
Okay. Does it ever come and go at all?
Yes.
Okay. Describe the circumstances when it comes and goes.
Lower speeds, it does not happen. When I get up to higher speeds, 45 and up, it seems like it does it more frequently.
Okay. So,
and it does not do it when I drive it manually. Only when it's in automatic.
Well, you're describing to me that they're working on lifters and valves and stuff. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Did you tell them that it changes between manual and when you manually shift it versus when it's in automatic? Did you tell them that?
Yes.
And so they're still working on the valve train?
I guess so. I'm hesitant to bring it back to the place for the third time.
Well, no. You is it under warranty?
Yes, it's under warranty.
Okay, you have to go in a lot. You have to go in a lot. You have to go in at least once or twice, maybe three times a year. You have to tell them the same symptoms all the time. And that preserves your right to get it fixed, even though it's out of warranty. That preserves your right. Does it come and go with cruise control?
I very rarely use cruise control.
Okay. Does it come and go with air conditioning application?
No.
Does it come and go with city driving versus highway driving? Is there a difference in it? Okay.
No, both.
Okay. And in the morning when you start it up and you drive your first mile, is the noise there?
Yes, it can be, yes.
Okay. I'm looking at a lot of different things, and I'm thinking to myself, well, if he says that he drives 2 or 3 miles, it's probably an exhaust leak. If he says that the air conditioning has something to do with it, it's the clutch kicking on and off. I'm asking you questions trying to eliminate all the possibilities, but it appears that they're working on the valve train. And I think you should tell them. And is it speed related? So the faster you go, the faster the click?
No, it all sounds the same no matter what speed.
Okay. And is it your impression that they're working on the valve trains and the lifters and all that kind of stuff?
the receipt that I get because it's under warranty is very vague. So okay. I see they replace gaskets and this, this, and that, which makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Okay. Well, you need to ask them. You need to ask them, okay? Yeah, here's the deal. Okay. You have to ask them what they're doing and have them explain all your repair orders. There has to be some semblance of you know, you've given me information. I'm hoping you gave them, and if not, you need to give them. You need to insist that you can take it out and show the technician what it is. But the fact that it's not speed-related and the noise has the same rhythm, no matter whether you're going 10 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour, 60 or 80, then
that's correct.
I don't. Now, I want you to change your climate controls when it's clicking.
Okay.
All right. I want you to do that. I want you to manually shift up and down. I want you to activate cruise control. I want you to go into air conditioning and out. I want you to go in heat and out. I want you to touch the dashboard and between the console and up underneath the dashboard. See if you can feel the noise. If you have somebody in the passenger side, have them touch the dash and underneath it. Can you feel the noise? Because I'm thinking it could be a mode door problem. And if it's a mode door problem, it would click inside the car more than outside the car. So I can't fix your problem. I can guess that there's either a disconnect between you and them, your symptoms and their repair, or they know that this is a problem and no one's been able to fix it. So they're just waiting for Mother Jesus at General Motors to tell them how to fix your car. But it's a 15, and I'm cognizant of the fact that it's 4 years old. So
you're right.
I think so it's time for another look. I think you need to take it to another shop, another dealer, and say, I need a fresh pair of eyes on this. And then I would insist that you take them for a ride, and you tell them, this is how to make it happen. This is how to make it happen. You need to hear it. And watch how I go from 20 to 50, and the noise has the same rhythm. So that's what you need to do. But I got to run. And when I come back, I got open lines available, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to talk about your car problem, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I'm here every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about car and car repair stuff. Let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. He's on my list, and he's the only shop in Mesa. Others have applied, but maybe they didn't have 5 years of experience. Maybe they had a couple of reviews that were kind of troubling. Maybe they didn't have any ASC certified technicians. But that's not with Thompson's Auto Repair. They've been in business since 1970. It's a great shop. Brian and Thelma run a great shop, but if you're in Mesa, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. That's the only shop in Mesa I have to offer you. I'm sure there's other shops in Mesa that are good and honest. I can tell you unequivocally that Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is honest and dependable. They've been around a long time, and they're not the kind of shop that's going to fold up tomorrow and leave you hanging. So, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Let me clean up to Ed. Stay right there. Dan on the Corvette. I came to the conclusion, based on what he said, that they were probably working on something to do with the valve train.
Okay.
If I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But one of the things, the most important thing that we talked about was, is the noise doesn't change with speed of the engine or speed of the vehicle. And that's troubling.
No, he said it does. He said it doesn't.
I'm sorry. I said that wrong. You're right.
Okay. Okay, so it does change with speed.
Right.
Yes.
And so the one thing I didn't tell him is you drive down the road, you get it to happen.
Okay.
You shift it into neutral and just coast.
Okay.
Take your foot off the throttle and just coast. What happens then? Then if you bring the throttle up in neutral, but you're still doing 50, 60 miles an hour, can you get the noise to come back? Now, if I was driving that car, but he's not allowed to do this because he's not allowed to do this. Did you hear me say he's not allowed to do this? I'd be driving down the road on a desert road by myself, get it to happen, and then I'd throw it in neutral, shut the key off. I wouldn't lock the steering wheel, but I'd just turn the key off, and then I'd listen. Is it still there? Because if it's still there, then I'd apply the brakes. Mm-hmm. And if the brake noise went away, then I'd let go of the brake. And if it went away as I did braking, then I'd know a pad was loose. The brake pad's clicking. So that's kind of the diagnostic process, but that's why I really said to Dan, you got to have them ride with you. Mm-hmm. You got to insist that they come with you because we're not making any progress.
Yeah, and you'd think after that many times in that they would want to.
You'd think so. Okay, Ed, you're up next. What can I do for you?
Oh, yes. I have a 2011 Honda CR-V, and it doesn't have that many miles on it, like 40,000. And all the fluids were changed, like in 2014, at about 25,000. So I was wondering, when should I change, like, the tranny fluid, power steering, brake, and coolant?
Let's back up. You say at 25, you said it's got 40,000, you've had the fluid changed right. already?
Right.
Including the ones you just asked me about.
Right. There was a certified Honda used car, so they changed all the fluids when I bought it. Or they said they changed it. They look clean, so I imagine they did.
Okay. I would think that you have 40 on it right now?
Right. Uh-huh. Yes.
And how long ago did you buy it? What kind of mileage did it have?
It had about 27,000. That was 2.5 years ago.
Okay. I'm going to say, so you bought it around 20. It's got around 40, and you're wondering...
Right.
And they already did all the brakes, the transmissions, the cooling system, and all that, power steering, and all that kind of stuff. They already done all that.
Right.
So now your question is, when do you do it? I'm thinking that my comfort zone would be between 75 and 90.
Oh, so don't touch it till then.
Yeah, you know, I think 25,000-mile intervals is way too early. First of all, the fluids aren't going to wear out sitting in your driveway, okay? That's not going to be an issue because all these systems are closed. Number two, your Honda is not well known for anything really ugly, and as long as you pull the power steering thing every once in a while and look at it, put a little bit on dab on your fingernail, and if it's cherry red and it's not brown like frosting, you're home free. Transmission the same way. Cooling system, look at the jug. If there's any hint of color in it, it's going to be okay. Your Honda CR-V doesn't have a rear differential. So
no, it doesn't.
Yeah, and so on brake fluid, when I did brakes, I would do the brake flush. And now, have you done brakes yet at 40?
No.
Okay. Well, I can tell you right now, your wife's not driving that thing because I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you. But typically, you're going to go.
Oh,
it's her vehicle.
There you go.
Don't tell her my last name.
See, yes, women do know how to drive.
No, I'm teasing him.
He
knows that. I'm thinking that you're probably going to do brakes sometime soon, fronts, and then you're going to do rears after that. You have two different times you can flush the brakes. So do them when you do fronts, because you're going to do the fronts before you do the brakes, because the fronts wear out a little faster than the rears do. So that's your brake, but the rest of them, I say 75, maybe 80. Yeah, if that puts you in your comfort zone, it would put me in my comfort zone. And if your wife was my sister and I liked my sister, then I wouldn't be concerned about 75 or 80.
And then they say to use only Honda fluid. They say use Honda power steering fluid, or it'll mess it up, or the tranny fluid.
Okay,
is that a truth, or is that just BS?
Well, I want you to look this up. It's the Magnuson-Moss Act. The Magnuson-Moss Act. And the thumbnail view of that is this. Toyota used to say you have to use our oil filters. And the Eureka used to say you have to use our bags on our vacuum. Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
A lot of people did that. Well, the Magnuson-Moss Act says that if you say that they have to use your product, then you have to provide it for free. I can tell you that there's lots of fluids out there that are even better than the Honda. And I'll tell you something else. That Honda fluid's going to be made by Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. And how do I know that? Is because those are the four companies that pull oil out of the ground and make oil that goes in the plastic jugs that we install in our cars. So everybody's oil is made by those four guys. So you got Harley-Davidson oil out there that's the best of the best. It makes you, it grows hair on your head. And really and truly, it's made by, you know, Shell or Phillips or Chevron. And
Chevron,
it's made by somebody else. And right now, let me tell you, I have firsthand knowledge that there's shops and dealers out there that say that they sell this brand, but in reality they're buying something that's a dollar less a gallon over here with a name that you would recognize. And there is, other than the fact that they say they're selling, and I'm going to use Mark Salem. I'm selling you Salem oil, but really I'm selling you Jones oil. Other than that, they're both comparable and they're both going to be fine, but that's happening a lot right now. And that's because oil prices are fluctuating. And I want to tell you the truth. We have, what, 5 250 or 220-gallon tanks of fresh oil?
Yes.
You can imagine that on my synthetic, if I'm paying $10 a gallon, you can imagine what 225 gallons is.
So, yeah, and I think we've had 10 price increases in the last year.
We have.
It's crazy.
So everybody doesn't want to move their oil changes, right, or their numbers, but they're going to buy a cheaper oil to accommodate the conventional, the semi-synthetic, and the synthetics. Mm-hmm. So my answer to you is if you're going to have them do the fluids, then have them do that. But if you come into the independent market, I'm not typically going to put... And Valvoline makes a really good transmission fluid that's called, what the heck, Max Life. Max Life, that's really good. And then the coolants, they have some amber universal coolants, and as opposed to being orange and purple and red and green and blah, 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 all the different colors. And the amber universal is, it can be going to any car. So us independent guys know that, but the dealerships will tell you that because it's self-serving and you can agree or not agree. Okay?
How about the brake fluid?
Same thing. It's .3 or .4, and unless you have synthetic, and if you have ABS, you don't have synthetic. So and it's going to say right on top of the brake master cylinder. You're going to see it in your owner's manual. But if it's synthetic, you still don't have to buy Honda. And if it's conventional, or if it's .3, and .3 or .4 are the same. So they have a boiling point of like 20 degrees difference. And so if you look up the specs on .3 and .4, it's the same. Now .5, there really isn't a .5, but everybody uses synthetic as being .5. Okay?
I had to take it into the dealer today to get the airbag inflator recalled for the passenger side. And they said, you need to change these three fluids. I said, what?
Well, and then...
brake fluid, power steering.
Oh, wow.
Well, what you have to do is, this is a prime example. Say, you know what? Let's do this. Let me pay for it and get it. Why don't you meet me out here by the driveway, and let's open up my service manual, and let's see where it says that.
Yeah, because there's no way you should have to do it twice in 40,000 miles.
Exactly.
No way.
So you can do what you
want. Making money on me bringing it in for the recall.
Yep.
Well, it's an opportunity. I want to tell you something now that we're on that subject. The dealers are asking us for the VIN number of the car we're ordering parts from. Okay? Now, my wife, we ordered some parts from the local dealer to fix her car, and shortly, and they asked for the VIN number, and we gave it to them because we needed. They said, "Oh, we need the VIN in order to do this." Shortly after, she gets a card in the mail from the local dealer that says, "Hi, Mrs. Salem, we're right around the corner from you, and we would really be honored to service your car." Right?
Yes.
So they know that they got the and they don't know she's my wife, but they're already marketing to her. Okay. So this is what I'm doing. Don't tell anybody, okay? The VIN number, I give them the first 11. That tells them all they need. The last six.
And I change the last four.
I scramble the last six, which is the serial number of the car. So they send their notice to a guy in North Dakota because he has that car. And I'll tell you something else. The other day, we needed an evaporator core that's under recall, and they're hard to find. So we call a bunch of dealerships. I'll put them out, Dodge dealerships. Yes. And we say, you got one? And they go, no, we're keeping those for our customers. Well, we found out later that they already knew that they had bid that work, but we beat their bid. And so the customer came to us, and we went to order the part, but they already knew that they had bid it because it's in the computer. So no one in Arizona would sell us one. This is a true story, I swear to you.
Wouldn't that be collusion?
Wouldn't that
be illegal?
Talk to Trump. He's got the definition of collusion. But this is what we did. We called a Denver dealer, and we said, we've got this Colorado car here in Phoenix, and it needs an evaporator. And they said, okay, we'll send you one. That's how we fixed the car.
Yeah.
That's how we fixed the car.
Couldn't you have scrambled the last six digits and they wouldn't know?
We didn't know it then.
Yes.
This was part of the whole process. But, yes, the answer is right now we're scrambling the six digits so the dealer doesn't know who our customer is because they are using that information to market to our customer.
And also to damage them. They won't sell you the part.
Yes.
Well, and I'm going to defend them in this case because these were hard to find. And if they have a bunch of cars coming in and they only have six evaporator cores, which is the cooling part of the air conditioning system, they're saying we're going to keep them for our customers because we're not going to sell them to Salem. So I understand that. But what I really believe was happening is everybody knew that some other dealer had bid this car, and I think it was an 18-hour job.
It was big.
It
yeah.
was huge. And we had this car parked from the windshield all the way to the back seat and from the windshield halfway to the motor. We had this car parked. So, but anyway, the bottom line is we got the customer's car fixed and everybody was happy. But that's what's happening in my world today. And so as far as your fluids are concerned, but, you know, if they do that again, just say to them, let's get our mile owner's manual out and let's look at it, because they're gonna all of a sudden have to go to the bathroom because they don't want to do that. Anyway, thanks a lot, Ed. Take care. All righty. We want to talk about one other good shop. That's Kurt's Auto Repair. He's up at I-17 and Bell, and he's on the northeast corner. Kurt has two guys, Jeff and Eric. I think they're related. Mm-hmm. Kurt's a big guy, and he's pretty strong-willed. As tough as Jeff and Eric are, they still don't talk back to Kurt.
No.
But the three of them are master technicians. And I can't tell you how many times I have sent a vehicle that was in the geographical area of Kurt, and he made me a hero. It was, no, it doesn't need a $4,000 engine. It needs an oil pressure switch. No, it doesn't need a wiper motor. We just need to plug it in. Those kinds of things. So if you're up in the area and you don't already have a car repair shop that you really love, then may I suggest that you call Kurtz for an oil change and see how they treat you. See if they give you a big laundry list of stuff that you need on your first visit. And that's not going to happen. So he has ASE certified technicians, and Kurt and Jeff and Eric are all ASE master certified technicians, as well as I am. I've been a master technician for 25 or 30 years. Mm-hmm. So you have to take a test every 5 years to recertify in every category of a car from front bumper to rear bumper, and only the strong and smart guys and seasoned guys are able to pull that off.
Are you patting yourself on the back?
Be quiet. I'm almost done. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com. If you want to start the conversation, mark@marksalem.com. That's my email address.